listen carefully.
Hello, my name is Joseph Friedman with the CRX Podcast, which is a podcast that's directly related to articles in the CRX magazine that comes out quarterly. This is all under the Pharmacy Podcast Network, where I used to have a podcast called The Medical Podcast with Todd Urey, but I'm thrilled to be a part of that. And in addition, I'm a pharmacist with a master's in business, and I owned and operated a medical cannabis dispensary that was very unique in Illinois, being the only one that was pharmacy-centric, and very proud of that and had a lot of fun with that. It's been kind of surreal at the same time. What I'm trying to do is get the good word out about the benefits of medical cannabis that's fair and balanced for all of you folks. You can find the CRX Podcast on crxmag.com or Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Enjoy listening.
You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
This is the PGX for Pharmacists podcast. We believe pharmacists are the best positioned providers to lead in PGX. Pharmacogenomics is the study of how genes affect a person's response to drugs. This relatively new field combines pharmacology and genomics to develop effective, safe medications and doses that will be tailored to a person's genetic makeup. This podcast is dedicated to pharmacists with an interest in learning more about the data analytics, industry trends, and evidence-based usage of pharmacogenomics. Welcome to PGX for Pharmacists, part of the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Hi, we're back, guys. And for people who still don't know me, I'm Benaz Sarami. I'm the pharmacist and medical science liaison for a PGX company. And I've been coaching pharmacists for years now and starting their own PGX consulting career. But most importantly, the host to the largest pharmacy podcast network here at PGX for Pharmacists. And today we have a unique guest with us, Dr. Jessica Wilon.
Hello.
Hi, thank you for coming on. I know you're very busy, but I appreciate you being here.
I'm excited. So
yeah,
you know me.
I can hear it in your voice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yes. Dr. Wilon is a nurse practitioner, but you're not your typical nurse practitioner. She's has a very diverse background in education with extensive experience in mental health and PGX combined. She's actually a very good friend of mine. I brag about that all the time. And she's got a brilliant mind when you sit with her. It's kind of an experience I cannot explain. But hopefully this podcast will kind of bring that out. She's a CEO in Inclusive Health System. Despite having autism throughout her training and career, she's received several scholarship honors and awards. She's a policy and political advocate and participates in multiple organizations to support healthcare legislation. She's been recognized and published by American Nurses Association as part of their Year of Advocacy. She's also recognized as an industry and national thought leader, has been invited to the advisory board members of psychiatric research and companies such as Allergan, AbbVie, and Teva, just to name a few. And she's a national speaker for medications such as Ubrelvy, Vraylar, Fadcema, Viabrid, Rexulti, and more. This whole podcast would just be probably an introduction on Dr. Wilon, but since she's done so much and continues to do a lot more, she's my role model, and I try to do my best to learn from her and her knowledge of PGX. So I will let her introduce herself, but she had me at, you know, people say she, you know, you had me at hello. She had me at a couple of genes here. So we'll talk about those and diagnose my personality based on those. So we'll talk about them, but I'll let her introduce herself and how she got to where she's at, and most importantly, how she uses PGX in her practice, and kind of let her introduce herself.
Definitely. Thank you so much. I feel like I have a giant set of shoes to fill now, which is awesome. Thank you. Well, I have been a practicing clinician, like Manaz introduced, and for me, Let's see, PGX has been still, it's been a journey. I feel like I was a very early adopter into PGX, how I got there. So for me, I always like to think, like, being kind of that contrary, I joke, I was born a month early, but first, and I've been the same way ever since. So I've always had to try and push the bounds, do things differently, find a better path. And in practice, especially in mental health, I've noted, you know, when I was an RN on the floor, even just a baby nurse, I started noticing, you know, this is a population, or just anyone struggling with mental illness, I felt like there was always this gap. Like, why don't we have some kind of testing? Why are we not looking at the whole picture for the person? So ever since I've been in practice, I like to say that I'm an integrative psychiatry specialist. I do holistic based care and functional psychiatry. So I don't just look at, oh, here's this diagnosis, you've got this label, you have these symptoms, now I'm going to plop on this DSM diagnosis and throw some algorithm medication. Because what I noticed as a nurse on the floor is the majority of patients didn't get well with that. And psychiatry seemed to be an area where it was this chronic, continual revolving door for patients' health. And I was like, there has to be a reason for this. We must not be making that approach the best way possible. So for me, it started a lot with, I'm going to do a dig into their healthcare. I think because my psych background started in geriatrics and in autism related illnesses, I think that was a huge moment for me with integrating, because those patients especially have less ability a lot of times to communicate their needs, wants, and what's going on. So you have to become a detective. The more that you're working with populations where people may not be able to speak what's going on with them, it then becomes the clinician, the nurses, the pharmacist, everybody's job to kind of work together as a team to figure out, okay, how can we best help this client? What's going on? And from there, it became testing a lot with blood work, looking at what medical things were exacerbating. When I discovered genomics and doing testing, and I think it's actually the autism that actually plays a great role for me, and I have to be thankful for my crazy brain sometimes, using crazy tongue in cheek. It's, you know, not to be rude language out there, but I own my weird and I own my quote crazy. So my autism brain really is good at noticing patterns. And what I started seeing when I started doing PGX testing in my office is certain clients struggling with certain illnesses, or certain even environmental things, we'll call it, like more prone to being in abusive relationships or more prone to doing well in school or all of these things, my brain started like ticking in, and I started noticing certain gene traits and multiple genes that would work together and how they would start to pan. It wasn't until later that I found out that the majority of the world doesn't think like this.
And that you think?
I just assumed everyone saw that when they were doing genetic testing, that they saw all the patterns that I see. And that's where I got really passionate about educating, because I started having patients that were coming into my office, and they say, it isn't uncommon for me to have gotten a patient that's like, you are my last hope. My plan is suicide if you don't fix me. And I was like, okay, no pressure. When you get those kind of clients that have tried everything and they were getting nowhere, those were the patients that I loved taking, because I was like, let me try the way I approach things, because I know it's different than how other people are approaching things. And let's see, just give me this opportunity and give me this chance to do well with your care. And we might go on this journey and find that things are, you know, we can actually get better. PGX has been such a staple in that, because I've seen for a long period of time in the patterns of how people respond, react, et cetera, not just environmentally, but then I could apply the medications. What works? What doesn't work? What I found was the biggest, one of the biggest barriers is, we'll call, I always, I'm sorry out there if it's offensive, but I always call them the old cadre psychiatrists who didn't want to change. We're like, it's not ready for prime time. I can't tell you how often I heard that in my face when I would go to some of my colleagues at the national level. And it's so exciting because this year we're seeing like a shift to really start to happen where we're seeing more PGX being introduced across the board. For that, I like to say I was doing it first. No, I'm kidding.
That's cute.
But no, I think it's great that people are finally getting more on board and we're getting more into the research. I still think there's so much education to be had because the thing about genetics, it's not this where you can be like, oh, I have this gene, so this medicine works. And that's what everyone wanted. But the problem is genetics also interplay. We're a little more complex than that. So people do need to understand. And if there's one take home point, the way the genes work, understanding what the gene does and then how it relates to also other genes can be very impactful for then how you're going to treat your patient. And I try and look at that overall picture when I'm even picking medicines, because you might have a patient that will say, okay, let's say they're a COMT MET. Means they have extra dopamine in the prefrontal cortex because they're not breaking it all down. But they may also be a DRD2 deletion, which means they have low density of that dopamine receptor in the prefrontal cortex. So typically a COMT-MET, if they're anxious and they're stressed out, you want to modulate that dopamine. And you could look at atypicals for that patient. A lot of the reports will actually say, oh, this patient may do well with an atypical antipsychotic for their symptoms. Well, if you're not looking at the fact that they're also a DRD2 deletion, you're about ready to maybe throw on some medicines that are going to cause some serious akathisia, because they have those low density in the prefrontal cortex. So knowing how those two work together, and I'll tell you, that person usually looks very depressed and very stressed out when they're a COMT-MET with DRD2 deletion. They have extra dopamine with nowhere for it to go. So in today's society, in this fast pace, they're not sleeping. They're running their mind. It's seriously, it's a very anxious, obsessive kind of person you're dealing with right there. How are you going to treat that? That's then the next step that I always like to take. And then also looking at other genes, because that's how you can really pick best gene for the scenario for the patient.
Yeah, and I feel like you're right with that resistance of some psychiatrists with their old ways, because I think a lot of us still don't have the education. And so that's key to educating. And because I know it's a lot of trial and error, but I think maybe a lot of providers, and correct me if I'm wrong, they think that this is a thing you look at and just pick a medication. It's just another guide, like another tool, just like we have, and I've said this before in other episodes, where we have like a diabetes guideline or blood pressure guideline. It's just another tool to use to kind of figure out where to go, not necessarily look at a piece of paper, the report, look at it raw and say, okay, from this box, I can pick this medicine and go. Right. Like you have to have this whole entire education piece behind it, exactly, picture behind it, and that's where it's missing that key. And I don't know how instead of educating, which is part of what I do all day, how do we get it massively out there, educate more clinicians out there, more pharmacists to help their clinicians or everybody, really. I just don't know if you have a better way to massively do that, because there's a lot of people to reach 100%. And there's a lot of people that need the help.
And I think starting here in like this kind of space so the word can spread and how people are doing it, applying it, is exceptionally important. What you're doing today is half the battle, is getting it out there in that, no, you're not going to read just right across a line. And this is another reason my other favorite topic is epigenetics. So how I always tell people that I look
at love that
my
too.
Practice, yes, because that's you have to factor that in when you're looking at this genomic data. You can't just be like, okay, they're a COMT-MET, that's it. Because most of the time you have tons of COMT-MET individuals walking around highly successful, not having any mental illness issues. Same with a DRD2 deletion. You have plenty of them walking around that aren't affected in a way that they're becoming clinical, where they're becoming someone that needs assistance with medication. So how did this person get here? What are the predispositions that brought this person to this space? Those are all things that are very important. So for me, I can look at the genes and I can be like, okay, under stress, trauma, and pressure, this person's most likely going to react this way, and this is what's going to happen. And if they become, quote, clinical, these are the kind of medications that it can prescribe that are more likely to be effective. How do we start testing that? Again, it comes down to understanding what that gene does, understanding how it works in the brain, and then you're going to apply your treatments based on that. So making sure that, you know, because here's another thing. So most of the reports say on a COMT MET use an atypical antipsychotic, but I'm here to tell you what I always say with my COMT MET's, they are used to being higher functioning than the average bear. They're used to be running a little bit, I call it a little bit hypomanic. It could be functional hypomania. So let me throw that out there. Not every, like, not clinical. They're used to be running as usually more intelligent, usually smarter, quippy. Like, they're used to running fast. If you give them those medications that block dopamine entirely, the ones that say on the report, the majority of them are going to say, I hate this medicine. I don't like the way I feel because you're blocking too much dopamine. And that's how they like identify. That is like who they are. Like, I am they're used to being the smartest in the class. They're used to being the leader, the functional, the go, go, go. I only sleep 6 to 7 hours. 7 is pushing it. 6 is pushing it. So once you start giving them a medication that really pushes the other way, you're really working against them genetically in the way that they're used to functioning. So for a lot of my patients, if they're not into a full-blown psychosis or something like that, I'm really looking at maybe a mood stabilizer. I'm looking at something that's going to modulate that dopamine and help support maybe some of the other genes around it. Let's say they're a glutamate, a GRK1 mutation, CC, and that makes them even more ruminative. Usually if I throw on a Lamictal to that individual, they're not going to feel that crushing of dopamine, but they're not going to flip into a psychotic mania now. And I'm addressing the glutamate and GABA modulation from other genetics that they might have had on board. To me, that's then a more perfect fit than just reading that report that says, oh, COMT MET may do well with atypical antipsychotic. So you really have to put a little brain power behind it, because I think also people were afraid that genetics was going to take over the clinician's job. That's not true.
I've heard that as well.
You still need that interpretation to know how things work, to know the epigenetics, to understand how their social background came into play, and what that meant for a patient. And that's how I apply it in practice. And then on top of that, and then we'll get one layer deeper, because, you know, I always have to do things a little extra, contrary to popular belief.
Which is why we love you. Yes. You know, like I said, like I was saying earlier, you know, people say you had me hello. Actually, you had me at COMT and MTFHR. Like, you were psychoanalyzing. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is brilliant. I love it. But, you know, like you were saying, to complement what you were saying at the COMT MET, those people are more maybe nervous or have anxiety, but that's how they function. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. You need to fix it. That's their thriving zone. So that's awesome. But yeah, go a little further deeper. That's cool.
Yeah. So the kind of that last layer that's also in this holistic approach, besides looking at the epigenetics and the triggers from the environment, it's also looking at those triggers from within, those health triggers. So I also say that the genes are always the roadmap. And then you take those medical conditions also can influence our genetics one way or the other. So if you have, let's see, we'll go with a COMT MET again, just because it's an easy example, and you give them hormones that may be pro-dopaminergic. Let's say you give them like some excess testosterone or something going on. That can push and influence those genes to be even more prone to being over-dopaminergic. And then they're going to be more obsessive, more anxious, and more all the things, more aggressive, and all of that. So kind of understanding, again, how health conditions can play a role. We also know that progesterone plays a role in glutamate. The synthetic progesterones a lot of times actually act oppositely on the sigma receptor from how we would like them to. And so to me, that's exactly explains why before we had PGX, people would say, oh, I feel more depressed. I feel more anxious as soon as I'm put on a birth control. Well, when you're put on something progesterone related in the synthetic, you're actually pushing that glutamate the other way. So how do I combat that if a patient really needs their birth control medication or something? Do I go, maybe I go to a, instead of reaching now for a pill to treat the anxiety, maybe they need a non-synthetic progesterone and they need actual progesterone or something like that. And they need a compounded medication so that I can keep their medications more minimal instead of just adding on something and adding on something. So being able to really look at that helps individualize that treatment to patients, because I'm all about individualized care, personalized medicine, because I call, you know, algorithm-based care, I call the 60-40 model. You might hit, 60% is the majority, but then 40% of your population is still going to be basically SOL to that algorithm. So, you know, how fair is that? Especially if you're the 40% person who got thrown a medication that may not work for you. That's not cool.
Yeah, definitely. And then we've talked about, I mean, not you and I, but I've talked about a lot about methylation as well. It's all kind of related, like you're saying, COMT, MT, FHR, epigenetics, methylation. I think it's just a big cycle that people have to learn. You can over-methylate someone or under-methylate, and there's a lot of personalities that come out just because of that. So a supplement like a B12, for example, Simplus or folic acid, you know, knowing how that works, and those supplements could just be a key to making all that work correctly. But, you know, you're the expert, so you talk about that. It's like supplements itself can help with anxiety if for some individuals, of course, you know, depending on what's going on.
Well, but, and I run an extensive panel in my practice. I usually run what I call my nutrition panel. I'm ready for the day that the Quest and the LabCorp stop breaking everything out and charging these insurances $1 million, or that the insurances help me, you know, cover these more small independent companies that run these panels, because I love running a nutrition panel. And I was getting a lot of flack from the community in my area because they're not used to seeing the kind of orders I run. It's not uncommon. I call it the mini Mayo workup of the Midwest, because we really, that functional integrative preventative approach is missing highly in the Midwest. I would basically run A, E, D, K, all the Bs, C, zinc, magnesium, and I'd run it on the RBC level and in the plasma level to see where patients' nutritional status is at, because it's amazing when their gut isn't absorbing and when they're deficient, exactly like you said. And it pushes those genetic tendencies a certain way toward anxiety, toward depression. That's why we've said for years, okay, vitamin D can, like low vitamin D can cause depression. Low B12 can cause depression and psychosis. So can low folate. Why did we check those things? Well, we check those things because they can lead to that. But the question, and then one step deeper, well, what was it that led to that? Not just the deficiencies, but how did this person get deficient? If they're eating fine, do they have a gut issue? Do they have genetic tendency not to absorb things? I like to know the whys and dig deep on that, because that's going to help each patient that's sitting in front of me get to total wellness. Because the answer is not, I used to say all the time, insulin resistance is one of my favorite examples of this. I have so many patients coming in with this anxiety and depression that's starting because their body starts sensing the insulin resistance way before anything else. And it reacts in a like anxious, moody sort of way. And they'll come in and they'll think that they have this stuff. I don't care. I can throw as much Lexapro on it as I want. That's not going to fix the problem. So unless I know that their C-peptide and insulins are elevated, and that's what's creating the genetic effect, I can give that Lexapro and they'll get like halfway to wellness. Maybe if that's their gene tendencies, and that's a whole other conversation of who would respond well to Lexapro versus a Lamictal in this case. But just whatever medicine I could throw on it is only going to win half of the battle if I'm not actually also addressing at the same time that insulin resistance, because that's actually a quote epigenetic trigger that's pushing that roadmap toward something. So that's why it's so important for clinicians and pharmacists and everyone to be working together to really offer that best care. I am a huge testing nut. I love to get the clinical picture ahead of time. And then, as I say, hand it off to the other specialists in a nice little wrapped up bow. I'm like, here's the problems. Now you specialists can take over and do what you need to do for that extra enhanced layer. But let me figure out what the problem is first, truly. Mm-hmm. And where the areas of weakness are and where we can focus on that so that we're really getting patients to the right place, the right time, instead of, as I like to say, the current medical model, which is like, let's wait until your leg falls off with diabetes. That's when we're gonna treat you, is because you have gangrene on your toes.
Like, oh my goodness. I mean, those are brilliant. How, like I said before, like I could sit for hours and talk to you. It's just amazing. Your mind is amazing. But I just wonder, like, if people want to, either whether it's clinicians, pharmacists, whatever career they are in, want to learn more about all these things that you're saying, I don't think there is not one place for them to go. It's just understanding and reading. But do you know of any specific place they can go to learn more? Because learning is one thing, but connecting the dots and making a big picture is a whole different process you also need to have.
Trade secret, I am working on my own webinars as we speak to start educating in the way that I approach things. Before there was what I'm going to try and build and put out there, in particular for educating on specific pieces. I used to just, if I had a question about a gene, I obviously started with the company that I was running the PGX through, and I would talk with the MSLs. I would learn everything I could about it. From what they knew, then usually because it was still less than what I wanted, because I always want more, well, who doesn't? I would basically go to the literature. I would look up, if it was COMT MAMET, I would look it up. I would look at all the rat models. I would look at what are they studying? What does this mean? What are they seeing? And I would start kind of just applying that to what I was seeing in my own cases and my own caseloads. And then from there, that's how I gathered a lot of my knowledge. You know, there were times, so BDNF is a good example. I had so many patients, you know, they're always like, oh, the BDNF mutation responds maybe to lithium. Well, not everybody can take lithium. Not everyone can tolerate lithium. So I looked at, okay, well, what does BDNF do? I went back to the literature when I was just a baby and all of this, trying to figure out how BDNF really worked in the brain and what it was assisting with. So it really helps in, again, being a glutamate modulator and decreasing glutamate. So when I was looking for patients that were having the BDNF mutation and or the glutamate mutation, I was like, what can I do to enhance BDNF, especially if lithium's not going to be the option? And because BDNF blocks glutamate, I was like, okay, I probably need to block glutamate in someone that has dysfunctional BDNF. And so I started reaching for drugs, and there wasn't many on the market when I first started this. There was basically Namenda and Nudexta, and ketamine was barely accessible at the time. You basically had to go get it through private means, because Spravato had not hit the floor yet. And some CBD and some supplements. So I started using a lot of Nudexta, like off the chain. It became one of my huge staples for assisting these patients that had these mutations, and go figure, it worked. because again, understanding what the gene does, how it works in the brain, and what you're trying to target as far as the dysfunction, that's going to help your patient best. Now I just need the literature to catch up to say, oh yes, this medicine does work on BDNF and glutamate mutations. We see this functionally. It's also enrolling the right patients and getting these clinical things started. I also need like a right and left hand to help me write up all my case studies for the stuff that I've done in practice. that is how this is going to start. That's how this is going to keep rolling and continue to help our patients.
Yeah, so for those people on the call that don't know about BDNF, you might want us, maybe you want to educate us on that. I think it's kind of the fertilizer of the brain, is what they call it, I've heard. And, you know, it helps regenerate nerves and, you know.
It does a lot.
It's an anti-inflammatory, like you can name it. It does a lot, yes. But again, I know you'll talk about the BDNF in a very short
We should do a separate session.
I know, a whole separate session for each gene. But the thing is, all those education that you just talked about, and reading and learning and reading and connecting, I don't know if a lot of clinicians would take the time to do all that, because you know, that's the piece that I think is missing everywhere. Yeah, and clinicians just doesn't mean necessarily all MDs. It could be pharmacists. It could be like any kind of
anybody. It could person be massage therapy,
helping a patient.
PT.
Exactly.
I mean, understanding how someone's going to respond. I mean, I had a good example of this in physical therapy. So I love working with brain injury clients. It's another one of my favorite interests. Anything complex and weird, I love it. So in this area, I've also gotten the nickname as Zebra Doctor. Which I love. I love that I've been awarded that title. It's cool to me. But with these, I had a patient that had brain injury, and one of the first things they love to do for quote aggressive behavior is plop on some Risperdal. Okay. Well, I have this patient that's going into their physical therapy, and their girlfriend actually hooks them up because they were seeing them at the time and was like, can you please see my significant other? They're not doing well, and they're going to kick him out of physical therapy because he's getting aggressive. So my first session with this client is basically the client can't even form any words. All that client can do is muster yes and no. So over about an hour and a half I took with this client, I was able to gather that the patient wanted to interact with PT, but something was slowing them down so much in the brain that they couldn't process, like they couldn't move muscle to getting it out there. Like their brain, the thought of wanting to move their hand, they couldn't get it from brain to hand. Now, being an ASP, we understand this kind of stuff all the time because we have all kinds of weird stuff like that. But I also had a little insight from having worked with patients long-term, and Risperdal historically in a lot of my clients has done exactly that. It's caused issue. And the less dopamine they have on board in their brain, they may be agitated, but that doesn't mean they need their dopamine crushed. If you have a calm T valve, they can get agitated and they can get irritable. But if you crush that, I'm telling you, my husband being a valve, he probably wouldn't love that I'm talking about that, but he was on a medication that blocked dopamine, and he literally lost a job over it. Thank you, a hospital, not going to mention who, but you know, a place that should be the most understanding, terminated him based on a new med change. These are things that patients come into my office fearful about all the time. Like, am I going to lose this? Is this going to happen to me? For this client that had that brain injury, basically the first thing I did was took him off what was definitely stunting his abilities. Because he actually needed dopamine in his brain, especially post brain injury. Crushing all that is not very helpful in helping their growth. Second, you need something that's going to either modulate that GABA glutamate most of the time, because there's damage that's going on. So the best neural literature will even support using neuroprotective drugs in this case. Why in my area, they love to throw antipsychotics on everything irritable. Maybe they make money on it in their personal pharmacy. I don't know. I pulled that off first thing, put him on a neuroprotective mood stabilizer. In this case, I used Carbitrol. I actually used a Quetro because it was it's labeled for mood changes and bipolar disorder. And so put this patient on that medication. Within 1 week, words were coming back. Within 2 weeks, sentences were coming back. He did not get kicked out of physical therapy and basically started on as if, you know, everything was improving. In just that one change from knowing basically genetically that he was low dopamine, should never have been put on a Risperdal. because that's only going to basically shut down any ability to process. Because if you got little dopamine as it is, and then you're needing more, and they pretty much put like a mega crusher of it on board to quote control the agitation, he was never going to get better. He was going to get kicked out of PT. He was not going to be able to continue on post this extreme traumatic brain injury he had. And we would have had basically a case of vegetable, like non-functional disability client, which is not fair to the client. Like they really, you know, needed other medications. And so I see this is the stuff now that, because I know so much about PGX, it actually lights my hair on fire, because now that I like when I know what I know, I'm just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're prescribing this to this person. Like I barely have to even like, cause I can pick up sometimes on what genes people might be without even running their genes. Now I've done so many of them. There's certain ones that pop out. Like when I hear about the medications they're on, even before I get them, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so horrible for this kind of gene type. If we come back and find out that's what it is, I'm like, no wonder you've been feeling like poo.
Well, like I say, you are brilliant, and I always try to learn more from you, although I'm already in that space. And it's just really amazing sitting with you. I know we don't have too much time on the podcast, but I hope you'll come back and talk more and more and more and more. And, you know, I'm sure we'll meet and speak more about that. But 100%. you're just really brilliant. Well educated in PGX and genes, and I hope this will inspire other people, other clinicians, pharmacists, everybody to kind of learn more and read more. I know we learn a lot in school and read and just want to come out and practice, but I think there's a lot in the field. There's a lot of information that continuously comes out, and we have to keep up with that. And so just reading is key. I think that's really the only thing I can say, because I know there's a lot of information to learn. We can't go Googling them. We just have to read literature and learn and connect the dots.
And of course,
and hopefully people can reach out to you and ask questions.
Yes, I know I 100%. Will be. I love questions. I am a questions nerd, so I love it. I do have an email that people can reach me at through my business. It's just Jessica, JESSICA, WHELAN at highhealthsystem.com, HEALTHSYSTEM.com. And
we will post that on there, on there as well, so people can just, in case they didn't catch that or were driving and listening to you, to your awesome self, they can write that down later, but we'll have that on there. But I appreciate you posing that, because people might want to reach out to you.
I am social media everywhere. So I have Twitter, I have LinkedIn, I have Facebook. So even
if I hope you're everywhere.
I've tried to make myself accessible. So if you don't feel comfortable emailing me directly, you can also or if you're more of a social media person that likes to DM through any of the platforms, they pretty much have all of those too. So
yeah. Oh, well, thank you for joining us today. I know you're very busy, so I appreciate you coming
on. Thank you for having me.
Putting a little piece of your mind to us and giving us some information there. So if you guys ever have any questions or need to reach out to us, it's on the podcast information.
Thank you.
Thanks for your interest in PGX and for spending some time with us. Please share this podcast and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. For all of our episodes, please visit pgx4rx.com. That's pgx4rx.com.